Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Welcome back to Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. Something that I've wanted to do for a long time, and I'm so excited that the folks here at the radio station are giving me the opportunity that occasionally when we don't have some of our regular guests, I have time open to bring in, and you've heard some of my friends coming in and talking about events and that kind of thing. But what I'm really enjoying now is I have several friends that I've known in the community who are exquisite, well-known, published authors. So you may recall a few weeks ago, I was able to bring in Christine Broderick Emanuel, and she talked about her book, West Side Story. So, not West Side Story, Westcott Story. Sorry, that's a whole nother show. But I'm so excited today to be able to bring in a personal friend, Martin Padgett, as the author's name. I know him as Marty. But the thing that's exciting about him is that he also is a alumni of the University of Georgia, but journalism school, where I graduated in the same degree. But he's also the author of A Night at the Sweet Gumhead, recipient of a Lambda Literary Fellowship. His writings appeared in the Oxford American, the Paris Review, and the Washington Post, among other publications. And guess what? He lives right here in Pensacola Beach, Florida. His new book just came out June 5th, The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick, Sex in the Supreme Court in the Age of AIDS. So yes, this is a mature topic. He may, as a disclaimer, any opinions we have are not of the station, but of the author. Also, just so you know, if you do have kids in the room, this may be a little more mature topic for you. But I'm excited about this book because it's nonfiction. It's the story of Michael Hardwick, and it's the story of American history in the Supreme Court. And it's very interesting. So welcome, Michael. I'm going to let you talk about it. I'm sorry, Marty. Listen to me. I'm thinking Michael. Marty. Welcome, Marty.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so glad you're here. So let's talk about the book. How did this come about? And how did you become an author in the first place?
That's a really good question. I'm not sure I have a great answer.
That's okay.
You know, I started my journalism career the day I left college. I left for Michigan to go work at Car and Driver magazine. So
okay.
A very different trajectory. And that's still, sort of, I call it my day job, but we're in the middle of the day and I'm not working. So
right.
I don't know how that works out. Car and Driver was a great place to learn how to do long-form journalism with a lot of seasoned experts. And you know, I worked with Brock Yates. He wrote the Cannonball Run movie.
No kidding.
Right. And it's fantastic. And
so he was working at Car and Driver while he was writing Cannonball Run.
Yeah. Well, no. Well, so he was, but I wasn't there yet.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
But, you know, one of my greatest mementos is, or just the greatest memories of him coming in, sitting on the couch in my office and talking about his buddies, Burt Reynolds.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
Dom DeLuise.
Yes.
And the notes that he would send me, like, you did the better job of driving and writing about the Subaru Impreza than anyone else.
You know, right.
It's a faint praise, but I'll take it.
That's right.
So, I, you know, the lure of going to Georgia for journalism school is strong. I didn't make it there until my late 40s. But when I did, I decided this is my chance in life to write about something else other than cars. And you know, I'd also written for some other places like Men's Health and Outside. And you know, I finally got fascinated with the history that was all around us in our neighborhood in Atlanta, the place where I lived when I first moved into the city. And there's so much there to write about. And, you know, Atlanta is a little, let me say, under-celebrated in some forms of history, but they're catching up quickly. And it's a time where I just thought, I'm going to be the one to capture this before we move on. You know, one of the big pieces of that story is just Atlanta growing from a city of less than a million people to the city of 6 million.
I was born there. Atlanta is not the Atlanta when I was a little girl.
It's not.
It's and, definitely changed.
And we repotted ourselves here a couple of years ago after I started work on this second book, and Pensacola is starting to get the vibe of growth, and there's great things about that, and there are things that we should really be cautious about at the same time.
And I should say that Marty's partner is Jack Brink, who works at the Visitor Center, Pensacola Beach Visitor Information Center, is the manager there, who worked for me when I was the president and CEO and is still holding down the fort. So that's kind of how I met Marty initially. But we had no idea that we had so much in common.
Especially Georgia.
Yes, I did not know. Really, I didn't know he was from Georgia
Florida
when I asked him
to
come talk about the book until we actually went to his book signing on Saturday night.
I should be doing a better job of pubbing Florida. I also have taught at the University of West Florida.
Oh, okay.
But at, you know, at some point, the Go Dogs thing. It's so funny. The first time somebody did that to me, I thought, who are you talking to? I didn't do it undergrad, so it wasn't embedded in my head.
You're in graduate school, right? That's right.
I'm getting better.
That's right. So what, talking about this book, and how do you select a book? What is the process? Because you can't just sit down. I mean, especially nonfiction and history. How do you gather all the information and the research and discern, especially with a topic like this, what's the truth, what was exaggeration, what's got bias in it from both sides of the aisle?
How do you discern all that? It is a tremendous undertaking. And in fact, when I wrote my first book, that felt more like neighborhood. I was talking about people that, you know, I could get to know a lot of them. And it was more like writing personality profiles, which I think is one of the things that I do pretty well.
Right.
But this time, it was this additional layer of knowing how the Supreme Court works and the legal system. So I really, I joked to myself I was going to have to go back to school for it. And in fact, that's what I did.
Did you really?
I did. I went back and I studied constitutional history at Georgia State, apparently because higher education needs more of my money and I need to keep paying them for
it.
But because I wanted to feel very comfortable about talking about it, you know, this is we're in an era where the Supreme Court has taken on a greater importance than it really has. And, you know, the last 50 years of American history is about the way that the Supreme Court is shaping law.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, I needed to really be fluent about the law of privacy and how that is traced, how it has been interpreted since the 14th Amendment was written, you know, 1866, 1867.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, it was a case where a man had gone back to his home after work with someone, and a policeman was trying to serve a warrant and made it into the house and found him in a situation that by Georgia law would have been a 20-year prison sentence.
Gosh.
He chose to challenge it. And you know the rules of privacy in the home, the evolution of law really started back in the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Brandeis said in text that we assume and that we are growing this body of knowledge around our right to be let alone.
Mm-hmm.
And that had by the 50s and 60s, that had become a substantial basis of case law for many decisions about contraception and just, you know, the choices to have a family, the choices to have a life with another person.
Mm-hmm.
And it eventually came to this case, which was argued at the Supreme Court in 1986 and marked a real bellwether in how the law was going to treat some people versus other people.
And believe it or not, you mentioned in the reception that you had that there are a lot of laws on the books that a lot of people would be very surprised at the lack of privacy rights you have in your own home, which I was surprised by that.
And that's part of why I felt so comfortable with the idea, but uncomfortable with my knowledge of it.
Yes.
And why I wanted to know, because you assume it's my house. I have the right to do it.
Right.
Well, do you have the right to do you have the right to sell drugs in your house?
Mm.
No. And there are so many dozens of layers of how we describe what privacy actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be absolutely comfortable with that before I could explain to people in a book, well, here's what I know about it, and here's how I feel about it. Here's what you should also know about it. I think it's, you know, our legal code and the way that it's put out there in the world through the courts and through police and all, it's so complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And we have assumptions on what we are and who we are and what makes America the democratic stronghold that it is. And it's useful to show people here are the nooks and crannies of how that actually works.
It's fascinating, and especially in the political climate that we're in today, it's hard to discern what is the truth of our history.
And that's another thing that's really good to speak to, because the discussion now is how can you implement like advanced technology to help us do our jobs easier and better. It's almost impossible in history because so much, like in this book, so much of what I had to research was not available online in any form.
That's true. Right, because it was back in the 80s. Hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. I'm here talking to Martin Padgett, also known as Marty, about his book, The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick. Can't wait to hear more about the story itself. If you've got a question, you can always text it in at 850-437-1620. We'll be back with Pep Talk in just a couple minutes. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. I'm so excited to have with us this morning Martin Padgett, who's written a new book, just reached bookstores on June 5th, The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick. So what I'm doing now is I'm trying to bring in local authors. He does live here in Pensacola Beach. So tell me more about the research and what you had to do to get to the truth of this story.
Research is my favorite thing to do because I get to do it by myself. And
you know,
the thing
that.
Is, it really takes a sort of nationwide effort.
Mm-hmm.
I think people assume, oh, there's a library, I'll go there. Six or seven different places around the country that had pieces of the puzzle that I had to put together. I had to develop this working knowledge of Florida because I had just moved here. And the story, the middle of the court case takes place in Atlanta, but Michael was a Floridian. He was born in Miami and ended up spending most of his career after the case there, ended up moving back to Gainesville with his family before he died in 1991. But I had to become a Floridian pretty quickly. And normally, yes, I think that's more of an immersive process. Like when you feel cold at 60 degrees, I think then you're officially a Floridian.
That's correct.
I'm getting there. But I had to go to Cornell University. I had some records. I went to the Library of Congress for other records.
No kidding. Especially from the Supreme Court. Were you able to get a transcript of the trials and that kind of thing? Or
That's all available digitally, too, through National Archives. But there's a piece missing. And usually these cases have oral arguments recorded. There was no audio for it. And there was also no audio of the day the decision was released. And I, luckily I had an elementary school friend who works at the archives. But you have to really go to the places where the information exists. And that's another piece of the historian's puzzle. I think people assume that, you know, all this information is available to us universally from our desks. And it's actually the opposite.
Right. Because it's not. Especially from when you get into the history where things were not digital, which, by the way, folks, has not been that long.
No,
It's really like 2000 back. A lot of it was paperwork and files.
It's 0.01% of the information we need to do our jobs. So that's why it's so time intensive. And in my case in particular, because Florida, Atlanta, D.C., New York, Vanderbilt has great archives that I had to use. And then to meet a lot of the friends that are still around that I was able to put together pieces of his life. Again, the same places, and particularly in Gainesville, spending some time with his family that still lives down there and his nephew up in New York.
Well, certainly when you become suddenly, and I don't think this was something he wished for, when you become the center of a huge Supreme Court case that has impact all over the country, and then what happens afterwards? I mean, suddenly you're a celebrity when you didn't necessarily want to be, and that's got to be a huge lifestyle change for him and the impact it must have had on his family.
I think when the case was submitted, he agreed to be the face of it and his name attached to it, because in prior similar cases, no one had wanted to be the named defendant, but he felt comfortable. He felt like, I have my family, I have my community, I have a job. All those things are working in my favor. But then during the case's progress through and up until the Supreme Court, he felt the need, let it be argued, let it be decided, and I won't be a celebrity. But after it was decided against him, he was convinced to go out there and be a public face for, you know, the people who wanted greater privacy rights. So he was on the Donahue show.
Oh,
he
gosh.
Was on Bill Moyer's PBS show. He attended the big protest that happened a year later. That was partly inspired by his case in Washington. Half a million people showed up to protest the decision and the ongoing epidemic. And it became a part of what he did, but he really wanted his life back. So he moved back to South Beach in Florida, became an artist who designed the interiors for some of the famous nightclubs that sprung up in the 80s.
Wow.
He was already ill by then and worked as long as he could and had some help from his sister, who was also an artist. But he had to move back with his family in January of 91, and he passed away in June.
Young. It's a fascinating story, and I'm really enjoying this idea of being able to bring authors who are from our area. Marty lives right here in Pensacola Beach, and the book is The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick. So we got a text coming in. They want to know, how can they get an autographed copy of your book?
For now, I think the best place, Barnes & Noble. I like to send people to bookshop.org so they can support a bookstore that might be near them, where they can buy one. Autographs, that's a kind of unusual question. We need to have another book signing. I will be doing events in Atlanta on September the 4th and October the 8th, but we'll try and put something together here again locally.
If someone's in Atlanta during that time, it is starting to be football season. You
that's
know,
right.
Where would they find you on those events?
September the 4th is kind of an industry discussion. October the 8th at the Margaret Mitchell House, part of the Atlanta History Center.
Yes.
We're going to have an evening event to talk about the book and to talk about Atlanta history. And it's the day before my birthday, so I get to have a good birthday celebration too.
Margaret Mitchell,
bring cake.
Still one of my favorite books. Still one of my favorite authors.
Yeah.
A great history. That's a whole nother. That's a whole nother story.
Right. We could jump off in that talk
Absolutely.
For hours.
Absolutely. So when you're talking about this book, and someone maybe is not familiar with these issues, maybe it's a new topic for them, why would you recommend that someone read this now, all these years later?
I think it's relevant because of the Supreme Court's ability to inflect the ways that we live our lives every day. People can feel remote or detached from the law because it's decided in a far, it's decided
really
in a building.
Me.
It doesn't really affect me until it does. And I think that was actually Michael's point of view. It didn't seem like in his community like this would be a problem for somebody to come into his house and arrest him, for consensual activity in his own home. But the thing is, there are laws in place that just sit there dormant. Mm-hmm. And until the exact set of circumstances happen, they don't get activated. And in this case, they did. Even in the time, it was getting rarer and rarer. But you know, the law still exists. Mm-hmm. And actually, Georgia still has the relevant laws on the books because they're using them to prosecute other things that are for far more serious instances.
You know, right.
In this case, it was an understanding that we were going to have to define privacy differently to live up to the things that we were saying about privacy in general. Mm-hmm. Remember, this was the decade of 1984
right.
and Orwell, and people were very sensitive to being videotaped.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
Think of all the ways that happens
now. I know.
Exactly.
So true.
It was just the beginning of that public discussion of mm-hmm. how we are going to deal with technology
right.
knowing us this way.
This is very relevant to what's happening and what's happening with the Supreme Court right now.
Always.
So very interesting. Talking with Michael, I keep wanting to call you Michael, because the book's title is Michael Hardwick.
Right.
Marty Pageant is here with us on Pep Talk. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. 850-437-1620. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. I'm so excited this morning to have our author as an expert. Martin Pageant is here, better known locally as Marty. Welcome back. I'm so excited to hear about your book that just came out. The title of the book, The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick, Sex and the Supreme Court in the Age of AIDS. Very interesting story.
Thank you. I thought it was one that was well worth telling. And, you know, when you're involved in a project like this, the research alone could take years.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
You really dedicate yourself because you think that the story needs to be told and because you're fascinated by it. And I'm lucky that I guess I get distracted easily by shiny objects. So this was...
How many years of research did you do for this before you published?
This one only took, I want to say, 3 years total. My prior book took a little bit longer because they had some overlap with them. Mm-hmm. And then once you actually complete the research, it's another year to write it. It's another 6 months to get it through the editors, to get it ready for publication. And then there's audiobook.
Right.
I've been lucky. I've been able to do both audiobooks.
Hear his voice. Wouldn't you love to hear him tell you a story?
Yes.
Wouldn't
you love me to hear me more on audiobooks? Please tell Penguin Random House and all the other publishers, because I would love to. This time it was particularly interesting because I got to go to the Brill Building in New York, where all the girl groups recorded in the 60s, and so many musicians, you know, Carole King and Jerry Goffin walking through the doors.
You said you were in the elevator just thinking of them.
It was so exciting for me. And, mm-hmm. and I really, you get to know your own writing in a different way when you speak it for other people.
I love that. Okay, where can we find the book? How do we get it?
All local bookstores. Barnes & Noble, I think, has it on stock now. And bookshop.org is a great place to refer people because you can choose the bookstore that you support, mm-hmm. and they can supply it to you. And if you're close enough to it, you can order it and pick it up there. And, you know, we like to support bookshops.
I'm so excited that you were able to join us. I know how busy you are. Marty Pageant is here talking about his new book, The Many Passions of Michael Hardwick, Sex in the Supreme Court in the Age of AIDS. And this should be very interesting as we follow what the Supreme Court is doing today. So, hey, you want to learn the history.
Thank you.
It's fascinating. Thanks so much, Marty. I'm so happy you could be here. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel.